You're listening to Chemistry in Its Element, brought to you by Chemistry World, the magazine of the Royal Society of Chemistry.
Hello, this week we're meeting the chemical that behaves badly and won't obey the rules when it comes to compounds involving oxygen. And as if that wasn't inflammatory enough, it's also the source of sparks that brings a lighter to life. But thankfully, it's also got a softer side, and that's as a soothing remedy for burns, as Andrea Seller knows only too well.
A few weeks ago, I had a stupid accident in the lab. I won't go into the details. I'm not terribly proud of what happened. But the result is that I suffered some superficial burns to my face and neck. I was seen to by a specialist nurse who tut-tutted at me and then handed me a big tub of ointment. "It's flammacerium," she said. "Apply it twice a day." "Flamma what?" I replied. "Cerium," she said. I was delighted. "Cerium? You cannot be serious. It's my favorite element." The nurse laughed. Fortunately, she didn't ask me why. She would never have got me out of the clinic. But perhaps if she listens to this podcast, she'll find out. Cerium is one of the first members of a series of about 14 elements with exotic and evocative names often referred to as the rare earths or lanthanides. The most striking thing about these elements is their remarkable chemical similarity, so much so that for almost 100 years chemists almost went mad trying to separate them. William Crookes, the great Victorian inventor and spectroscopist, wrote in 1887, "These elements perplex us in our researches. They baffle us in our speculations and haunt us in our very dreams. They stretch like an unknown sea before us, mocking, mystifying, and murmuring strange revelations and possibilities." Yet cerium stands out from the crowd because of its insoluble ceramic oxide, ceria, which has changed our world. But I'm getting ahead of myself. The discovery of cerium was an accident. Around 1800, a young geologist, Wilhelm Hisinger, was rock hunting on his father's estate on the island of Vestmanland in Sweden, and found a new mineral that struck him as unusually dense. Hoping that it might be an ore of the recently discovered element tungsten, Hisinger sent a sample to that element's discoverer, Carl Wilhelm Scheele, who took a look and said rather unhelpfully that there was no tungsten in it. Undeterred, Hisinger went to work with the great Swedish analytical chemist and theorist Jöns Jakob Berzelius. In 1803, they isolated a new metallic element that they separated, thanks to the insolubility of its oxide. They named the element after the asteroid Ceres, itself named after the Roman goddess of agriculture. At about the same time, a German analyst, Martin Klaproth, isolated the same element from a different Scandinavian mineral, and both reports appeared in the same journal a few months apart, causing something of an academic clash over exactly who'd got there first. The isolation of the metal, however, would have to wait another 70 years until the electrolysis of molten cerium chloride. The metal itself is nothing special to look at. It's the standard silvery-gray color, and it tarnishes slowly in air as an oxide layer builds up on the surface. But in powdered form, it's much more exciting. It's highly reactive, particularly when alloyed with iron. It forms a brittle material, ferrocerium, which sparks spectacularly when struck and is the basis of the flints of cigarette lighters and those exciting fire steels for outdoorsy chefs. Why does it burn so fiercely? Well, cerium is fairly electropositive, so it'll give up its outer electrons easily. And the oxide ceria that I alluded to earlier is almost brick-like in its stability, so it gives out a huge amount of energy as it combusts. Ceria is also very hard, which has made it a useful rouge or polish for lenses. If you happen to want to grind your own telescope mirror, then cerium dioxide is probably what you'll use. But what makes the oxide really interesting is that it misbehaves. Although the formula may appear to be CeO2, one cerium, two oxygens, in reality, the compound always has slightly less than two oxygens. The surface is peppered with defects, gaps where an oxygen atom should be. And the degree of imperfection varies. It depends very much on how the oxide is prepared or treated. So one of the headline uses for this apparently flawed oxide is in the catalytic converters of cars and trucks. A honeycomb of cerium dioxide helps to combust unburnt fuel coming down the exhaust pipe by releasing oxygen during the oxygen lean part of the engine cycle while picking the oxygen back up in the rich stage. As a nanopowder mixed in with diesel fuel, it can clean up the otherwise sooty fumes produced by trucks and buses. So cerium is critical to reducing the impact of the internal combustion engines that power our vehicles. But if you take an even closer look at ceria, it becomes more confusing. At first sight, it looks like a no-brainer. Cerium loses four electrons, handing them over to the surrounding oxygens. Leaving aside defects, this means it has a 4+ oxidation state. But at very close inspection with X-ray spectroscopy, it's clear that the cerium hangs on to at least some of those four electrons, and its true oxidation state is in a quantum mechanical limbo somewhere between 3 and 4. Indeed, the great Japanese spectroscopist Akio Kotani once wrote that there is no genuine example of cerium-4. And as always, there is mystery concealed just beneath the surface of even the most apparently simple-looking chemistry. So why, you might ask, is cerium in burn cream? That, too, is a mystery. The most that the doctors can tell me is that it seems to work, something to which I can gratefully attest.
That's UCL's Andrea Sella on cerium, the element that sparks up lighters, banishes burns, and can also help us to clean up our act when it comes to pollution. Now, next week is definitely a case of don't blink, or you might miss it.
The nuclear collisions used to make them created only about one atom per hour. Yet, with just 7 fleeting atoms of seaborgium to work with, the researchers figured out that it's a metal comparable to molybdenum and tungsten. In such virtuoso experiments, we can see the periodic table continuing to exert its pattern even among the elements that nature never glimpsed.
And Philbor will be telling us the story of those 7 atoms of seaborgium next time. I do hope you can join us. I'm Chris Smith. Thanks for listening.
Chemistry in Its Element is brought to you by the Royal Society of Chemistry and produced by thenakedscientists.com. There's more information and other episodes of Chemistry in Its Element on our website at chemistryworld.org/elements.